Welcome back again to the Chasing Tone podcast. I, of course, am Brian Wampler, back again with Blake Weiland. And today we talk about a YouTube guy who is using my pedals and is explaining why they were so terrible. And then we found out what gear he was using with them, which kind of raised some eyebrows. We talked about starter amps and, you know, how they're just way better than what they used to be. We talk about recorded sound versus room sound, you know, in dealing with the playing through a guitar amp. And we talk about zip ties on pedal boards versus Velcro. And then we also talk about a special pedal I got this week and the problem I had with it. And it was kind of a fun yet entertaining story with a sad little twist to the end. So let's get right into that.
Hi, Brian.
Hey, Blake.
What is going on?
Well, I'm sitting in between storm showers here. So it's like, feels like it's 95 degrees out, and then it rains
right
for an hour, and then the sun comes out, and it gets like 95 degrees. So pretty much, it's just a bunch of steam. It's like a big steam shower.
Mm-hmm. Well, at least your pores will be cleansed.
That's true. Welcome to Indiana with the early summer. So, and that's
interesting.
And that's been the weather portion of your podcast. Well, on to Blake and here, with the traffic.
All right. I got to send you something later along that regards. Maybe we'll use it on the podcast eventually, but it's real. It's something me and Leon recorded, and it's really stupid.
Oh, speaking of funny things, so last week we talked about Joshua Frazier reaching out with me with the video of my internet, my YouTube troller guy, right? Where I'm like, oh my gosh,
you guys are horrible. That's the worst guitar tone ever, you know?
And so...
Well, he has a name. I forgot what it was. The character.
Tad. Yes. Tad. So, and he redid it. He, like, made another version and sent it to me. He's just as good. So, I love it. So, I'm wanting to use that on an upcoming YouTube video, if I can fit it in somewhere. Without offending everyone that watches YouTube videos. That's the trick.
We'll put it, if we need to make sure those get into the, our groups.
Yes.
Also.
Yes. Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely.
I have a somewhat comical little I have a few things, but I got an email yesterday that was really funny. So I don't know how many people know this, but it should be pretty common sense. When you put your email address, like, or a public-facing email address out there, you tend to get some pretty comical emails.
Yes, very much so.
So I got one, like, it's like, from sales@bestamp-guitar.com.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, "Dear Manager, we are a musical instrument supplier from China, which has been in this field for over 16 years. If you're interested, please let me know. Warm regards, Jason."
That's an awful mainstream American name for Chinese.
That's what I was like.
Thank you.
Wait a
Hank.
Second. I was like, and it's like spelled, you know, things are misspelled classically wrong,
right.
which is fine. Like,
yeah, I mean,
I wouldn't be able to write in Chinese.
Right,
it's just funny that they chose Jason.
Right. If I was going to write in Chinese, they'd be like, I have no idea what this guy is saying. But for some reason, he's talking about goats and it makes no sense.
Mm-hmm. But it's just funny, like, that to get these emails. What I was thinking about is, and I also got hit with the classic Nigerian prince scammer one here recently.
Oh, I haven't been hit on by a Nigerian prince lately.
Yeah, it's been a while for me too. But I just got to thinking, like, how weird it is that, like, whether it's a bad sales email or whether it's a scam, somehow these things still work. Like, if they didn't work, nobody would be doing it.
They would stop doing it. Yeah.
So it's like, wow, it's amazing that after all this time, people still are buying from the random Chinese manufacturer and also falling for the Nigerian prince. Man,
I will say, and I'm probably going to get flamed for this, but I have tried buying, not guitar pedals or anything, but I have tried buying a OEM product for from a Chinese manufacturer that just emailed me straight up.
Right.
It wasn't for like it was. So I mean, some people do or may not know. I dabble in the Amazon sales as well, and eBay here and there, mostly for fun. I just like, I don't know. I like that
experiment.
Yeah, it's kind of fun to do. So anyway, so I was working on some private labeling, as they call it in the Amazon circles, and it was a good experience. I'd never done anything like that before. And it was fun. Not fun. I mean, it was fun in that I see how it works now, you know?
Yeah.
And
you learned some stuff.
Yeah, and I didn't get ripped off, thankfully, but it was cool.
Yeah. Are we going to start this into a business podcast again?
So I'm going to tell you how to...
We haven't done that in a while.
So I'm going to tell you how to make $1,000 a day using Amazon. First of all, I need you to go to briansamazoncourse.com and buy it, okay? It's a $5,000 course. But
how much is it?
It's a $5,000 course. But, you know, everyone who's taking this course is making $1,000 a day on Amazon. So, you know, you'll make it back real quick. If you don't...
This sounds so easy.
Yeah, it's so easy. You literally can work from the beach, from a laptop, and make $1,000 a day. And if you don't make $1,000 a day, that's not because it requires work. It's because you just you're not putting in the effort, really.
Oh,
you know?
Okay.
So but yeah, briansamazoncourse.com, $5,000 course. You get free coaching with that. Basically, it's email coaching, and we respond within 30 days. So, yeah.
Well, this sounds like a heck of a deal.
Yeah.
I'm going to slide right on over to briansamazoncourse.com and pick up my guaranteed rich course today.
I don't know if you've noticed this, but I keep noticing everyone now, and like 15 years ago, it was how to get rich off the internet. Now it's like how to get rich off Amazon, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like every time I open up a Facebook page, there's another sponsored ad with, you know, a new Amazon program.
Well, there again, it goes back to what we were saying before. If nobody was making money at selling the course, then nobody would be doing it.
Yeah,
so yep. Somebody's making money somewhere off somebody.
You have a good point.
So
you have a good point.
Today, it's not me.
Well, and apparently it's not the, this kind of a little side note here. I love to throw it in. I mentioned the troll a minute ago. I had another one this week.
Oh yes, you did.
I don't know if it was technically a troll, but it kind of was. Like maybe
I don't know. It's not really a troll. Just more of a uninformed.
Yeah,
uninformed.
Right. So I'm just going to put this out here for anyone that uses pedals. Okay. You can't. Okay, it's not. You can't come from an informed position. If you're like, yeah, I bought all of, like, a bunch of your pedals, and they all sound like holy crap, you know? They sound like bad dog poop on a stick in a freezer, right?
Right.
So I'm like, huh, wow, that's, like, I wouldn't think it'd be that bad. I'm like, what amp are you using? He's like, a Crate G10 or something like that. And I'm like, dude, everything's going to sound like crap through that amp. Like, I don't even know. Like, first of all, if you're buying a pedal and it costs more than your amp new, I think your priorities are backwards. You know.
Well, there's and there's exceptions.
There are,
of course, right?
There are, yes, there absolutely are.
But like, yeah, as a general rule, I've actually ran into this. So it's funny that you sent that because I've been kind of in amongst various gear conversations. I've seen this pop up a few times just recently. Maybe it's all the same guy. I don't know. But
it's
like
the same. It's the same. He's hitting every forum and every manufacturer.
But I'm just like, well, what are you playing? And sometimes it's not as bad as like as that, right? It's like where I'm playing through the cheapest, you know, Gorilla amp that I could find. Sometimes it's not that bad. Sometimes it's just like, well, those amps notoriously don't work well with big muffs,
right?
You know, mm-hmm. Like that, you know, that's just a known thing with certain amps,
right?
And so it's like, yeah, before you place all the blame on the pedal or the guitar or even, you know, you just got to look at like we've talked about before, the tone is tone and gear and all that is it's all a big system.
Right. Yep.
And so you got to understand how each component interacts with the other one.
Right.
It's like, you start calling it out.
Right. It's like just because you bought Nike track shoes doesn't mean you're going to go out and win a race somewhere. You know?
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day. That should be a quote somewhere. That should be on our website.
Yeah, because that makes sense. That needs to be on your website.
Oh, I'm sorry. To those I offended.
Oh, but on that same token, I can tell you a little something about a trip down memory lane, down gear memory lane.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sitting here looking at, I still have my first guitar amp, which was a Krait XT120R.
Wait, so that's a 120 watt Krait.
Yes.
That's a 212, I think.
Yes, it is.
So that's a pretty good starter amp. I had a little Kingston 5 watt with a 6-inch speaker, dude.
Oh no. This was a great starter amp. And I actually plugged it in the other day and I was like, it's not amazing, but you can dial in some perfectly acceptable sounds out of it. I didn't know how to dial it in at the time, but anyway. But I always thought it was worlds better than Leon's amp, which he had at the same time. And ironically, he brought that thing over and left it here the other day because he needed a little bit more room in his studio.
Right. What amp is it?
Which is the legendary Line 6 Spider 2.
I was actually going to bring something about that up, but yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
That also has some mostly on the clean side, has some pretty acceptable clean sounds, but good grief, you can make that amp sound like the worst thing on the face of this planet without much effort.
Yes. Yes. But you know what, though? I mean, so you got to keep in mind, I've got like 15 years on you or something, right? Somewhere in that neighborhood. So back in the early 80s when I was first starting, actually about 1980,
right.
Holy crap, I'm old. Anyways, I've mentioned the little Kingston solid state amp.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it had, like, a volume and a tone. Like, that was the controls. You know, no distortion. I mean, you could turn it up and overdrive it, and it didn't sound good when you did that. But, I mean, mm-hmm. like, that was, you know, it was kind of like a Gorilla amp without distortion. I mean, that was, in those days, that was your starter amp whenever you went to the music store.
Right.
You know, I mean, like, so, like, I'm looking at it right behind me for a video I'm doing kind of around this topic. I have a Fender Frontman 25R, little bitty amp. Mm-hmm. I think it's got a 10-inch speaker in it, solid state.
Right.
And then I have, like, the little Line 6 Spider IV30.
Oh, so, I don't remember what that is.
Oh, it's got like the, it's probably the same thing. It's a Line 6 Spider that it might be a 10 or 12 and it's very small, low wattage, a bunch of different channels. Some of them are decent. Some of them are not decent, you know, probably the same thing mm-hmm. based off the same thing. But I guess what I'm trying to hit on is that if you're starting out, like, the gear now is, like, so much better as, starting out, right out of the gate.
Oh.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
Than it was whenever I was, you know, 7 trying to nail Rock You Like a Hurricane with a 5-watt Kingston, and, you know, that's about it.
Oh, absolutely. Like, well, even, I mean, that Krait at this point is, 10, 12 years old? So,
yeah.
I don't even know. It's pretty old. Man, even back then, that thing, I think my parents picked that up for me, and it was like $120.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was not expensive.
Right.
And that it's still, like, you could keep up with a drummer. Like, it's pretty crazy for what you get for the money. I mean, it's nothing like, it doesn't sound anything close to what my Benson sounds like, but
right.
for $120, it's hard to argue with.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, if you're just starting out on that, life's looking pretty good for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and especially, even if you're not starting out with that, it's like you can download some really inexpensive DAWs. Okay, and so if you don't know what I'm talking about there, programs for your computer that allow you to get impulse responses.
Right.
Then, so, you know, an impulse response is basically like a digital symbol, digital emulation of like a whole signal path. So they'll run a signal through, I may have talked about this before, they'll run a signal through an amp and a speaker with a certain mic in a room, and they capture all the information about that signal. That becomes a file called an impulse response. And I'm like totally layman's version of this, right? So mm-hmm. I'm sure an engineer is out there going like, oh my God, no. Okay, for everyone else who's not a dork like we are, Mr. Engineer guy, I'm explaining it to a guitar player who doesn't care about the math. Okay, so they're not wanting to carry you know, like the next quotient and do invisible number math, you know. So anyways,
I got, it's all fake news anyway.
It's all fake. So anyways, so that allows you to, what I was getting at before I rudely interrupted myself, is that allows you to really get a pretty damn good sound, you know, on a budget. Because a lot of these impulse, not a lot, but there are some impulse responses that are totally free and sound pretty good, mm-hmm. you know? So, and that's a way where you could just, you know, you got a couple of pedals and you run it through a computer, through a set of, you know, your headphones and get a pretty good sound.
Especially, I know we've talked about this before, but like, especially what I was saying is the recorded sound these days, you know, say you record two tracks, one's mic'd with the, you know, a dumble mm-hmm. and one's, you know, a emulation of that.
Yep.
A recorded track, I think I could, I'm no Eric Johnson, so I bet I couldn't tell a difference if both were done well.
I've done a test. I did a test in our tone group where, I think it was the same thing. I played one, and there was like a couple different versions. Like two were mic'd differently. So I had like mm-hmm. you know, one mic and on one mic on another one, and then it was the impulse response. I think I was playing through mm-hmm. the two notes, I think, and or something along those lines. And right. yeah, and there was a lot of people who thought that the mics were the impulse response. Yep.
Yeah, I don't think on a recording I would know. And I've played a lot of music and amps and stuff. I don't think I would tell a difference on a recording.
Well, there's a YouTube guy, and you may be familiar with him. His name's Robert Baker, and he does a lot of demos. He does some demos, but a lot of how to play type stuff. He's got a YouTube channel that I like a lot.
Right.
And recently he did a demo of the Pinnacle. It's been a few months back, actually. And it was kind of cool. Like he created this song, and he had me like do a solo for part of it, and like shoot the video, and I sent it over to him. So it looked like he was playing through the song, and then when it came time for my part of the solo, it was my footage, right, inserted into it. And it was a fun thing to do, fun project. I thought it was a really cool way to demo something. But when I heard the tracks, I'm like, holy balls! Like, what are you using on this? And he's like, it's the two notes, man. I think it was the two notes. It was my impulse response, man. That's mm-hmm. just an impulse response. I'm like, holy crap. That sounds freaking massive. You know, here I am. I spent 4 hours with like eight mics trying to get it to match the context of the song, right? mm-hmm. Oh, man. So, yeah.
Yep. But then there again, rewind a little bit. We go back to the old trope that we've beat, like, that dead horse a million times. But in the room, nope.
Yeah.
That's impossible.
It's a totally different sound. Yeah, that mic'd sound is a totally different sound than the amp in the room. Mm-hmm. It just is. And I've spent a lot of time not only researching but trying to recreate it. And it's just, I don't think you can get, you can't get 100% accurate version of it. It's just so hard. I mean, I try to on a lot of the videos, and it's just, holy crap, I've got mics everywhere trying to pick up reflections, and I'm, you know, trying to counteract phasing issues, and like all this stuff, man. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, well, maybe once we get to like ultimate virtual reality, we'll have this, but how can you recreate like the sound in your skull that happens when the air actually moves your bones.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to take someone a heck of a lot smarter than me to figure that out. I can't get it to be dead on accurate. And you know, when you do the research, I mean, the way your ears perceive things is totally different than having like two mics set up in the position that your ears would be, like two condenser mics. It's just totally different, totally radically different.
It's true. It's a whole nother thing altogether. It's even weird because when you're talking, and I know this from experience because I blabber on the internet all the time.
Right.
What I hear my voice come out of my face sounds completely different than when I hear it in headphones.
Oh, same here. Yeah.
And it's like, oh my, I sound like, oh, I'm sorry that anyone has to listen to this.
I always hear myself back and I'm like, why do I always sound like I have a cold?
Right. I'm just like, man, I sound really dumb, but you know, okay, I guess it's not too dumb. Somebody's listening. Sorry, everyone.
Well, they got nothing better to listen to.
Well, this is unfortunate. There's some really good podcasts I could point you to if you need something better to listen to. Shoot me an email. We'll talk about it. We had some other stuff we were going to talk about. What was it?
Well, we had Andy Reichenbach that asked us about zip-tied pedal boards versus non-zip-tied.
20 minutes in, we finally get to the main topic of what we were going to talk about.
Well, what do you know?
Shocking. Shocking. Have you ever messed with a holy board or anything like that? Temple board or anything that's designed that way?
And I have a temple here. And I haven't messed with the holy board, but I've messed with like zip tying and stuff before. And I mean, I have before, like in a pinch when I didn't have like any Velcro or anything and I needed to go to a gig.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't like it. It's so permanent. You know, it's like commitment. I feel like I'm putting a ring on the pedal, you know, like I don't want to be married to you. I just want to take you out for a date, you know?
Well, see, I almost looked at it a little bit different, right? I've recently come up with, or I didn't come up with, I heard about a solution for this problem as well. Sometimes I get pedals from people to try out that I got to send back. And I don't really want to be sticking Velcro on somebody else's pedal, right?
Yeah.
Well,
I can see that.
And so the zip tie, so let me back up. The zip tie in my mind, like when I first seen the holy board, I was like, that's genius. That's awesome. In fact, I think I called or texted my buddy Jess, who was about to buy or build a pedal board.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, don't do it. Do it with zip ties. This is so much cooler. Think about it. You never ruin your pedals. Blah, 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 blah. The reality is the holy board design's really smart and really well thought out.
Mm-hmm.
And that one works really well for that setup.
Right.
But the problem is, one, the zip ties don't look very good. They just don't. And we hear with our ear, hear with our eyes to some degree. And looking down at zip ties is not as visually appealing as not.
Well, you know what? I hate to interrupt you and don't let this change the topic, but maybe that's a perfect idea for a pedal board company like Holy Boards, for example. Maybe they need to come up with some killer looking zip ties. You know?
Fancy ties.
You know?
I don't know how to make a zip tie look any better than it does, but hey, if somebody can figure it out.
There's got to be a way. You know, maybe we need chrome zip ties. You ever thought about that?
No.
I'm just saying. Maybe it needs to be made. Maybe it's time. Maybe it's time for someone to instead of zip ties, we have U-bolts with the, you know what a U-bolt is, right? It looks like a U. It's got threads on the bottom side of it. You got washers.
Yes, I know what a U-bolt looks like. Yeah. Come on.
I mean, maybe we're using some fancy U-bolts that attach to boards, you know? These things are locked in place for years. You're married to this sucker, you know?
Brian, you should just stick to pedals. Just stick to what you know over there, buddy.
I'm just spitting out ideas for the entrepreneurs in the crowd. That's all I'm doing.
Okay. Well, you guys can take that and do whatever you want with it. Anyway, back to the topic at hand. So anyway, point being is at the end of the day, pedals come in all... There's a lot of standard size pedals, but they do come in all sorts of different shapes. And there's some pedals that just simply... Like, try to zip tie a Dr. No pedal to your
or fuzz face.
To your board. Yeah. It's just,
like, where do I,
you know...
Where do I put the... It just keeps slipping off.
Yeah. And then there's some, like, where the knobs and the switches are oriented in a way that don't lend itself to the zip ties. It just... It works for almost everything, but not everything.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. I remember trying to zip tie my Digitech Whammy down, and that was such a pain. Such a pain.
Yeah, I can see that.
So it just doesn't work for everything. It works for almost everything, but not everything. And so it is kind of nice for, like I said, you're borrowing something or you just simply don't want to put Velcro on it because you don't.
Right.
Then that works good. But there is a solution for that as well. I can't remember who told me about it. Somebody told me about it. I didn't invent this. But you take that blue painter's tape, stick it on the bottom of the board, stick your Velcro on your bottom of your pedal, stick the Velcro on that, and then it peels off nice and clean. No muss, no fuss.
Hey, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
That's not a bad idea at all.
And then your pedal stays pristine. Well, as pristine as something you step on can stay.
Well, I'll be.
Anyway.
Yeah, that's pretty ingenious.
I heard, who did I hear that? Oh, I don't think he invented this either, but I heard it from John from Creation Music Company, who makes pedal boards. So there you go.
Well, there you go. He would know.
Mm-hmm.
And John, you're totally welcome to use my idea about the U-bolts or, you know, fancy ties. That's totally.
Fancy ties.
Yeah. Feel free.
Trademark. Fancy ties. I'm sure somebody's already trademarked that term.
I'm sure if you go to fancyties.com, I probably wouldn't do that. It's probably not anything to do with zip ties. I'm just saying. That's probably a bad idea.
It's just a bunch of guys with well-groomed mustaches and bolo ties.
Could, that's one explanation. Could be. Could be.
So there, that's kind of my take on the zip tie pedal board. They're good for a lot of things, but they're not necessarily universal.
Correct.
That's kind of my thought.
Right. Right. So, which brings us to, was that you?
What?
Oh, I thought maybe it was maybe it was me. I heard a big loud noise in my ear. Anyways, that's not what I wanted to say.
Okay.
So I, if you follow the Wampler Tone Group at all on the Facebook, you may have noticed that I bought some inexpensive pedals this week or this last week.
Ooh, one of my favorite things.
So I bought I'm doing, like I've been talking about for months now, I'm working on this DIY book, right? New mods, new format, all this stuff.
I'm pretty sure it's years at this point.
It is years, but yeah, I mean, I've been hitting.
I think you talked about it the first time you came on to my podcast.
Probably, like, but I mean, now like
2 years ago or whatever.
And the thing is, it's because the last version was so 2004, you know, that there's just like, it's not that everything's changed. It's just that there's a much better way to explain it and to do it. So it's basically requiring me to rewrite like 400 pages.
Well, and didn't you say like you looked back at it and some of it was like, no.
Yeah.
That shouldn't say that.
Right.
That doesn't make any sense.
Right, yeah. Yeah, exactly. I'm like, no, it's not really increasing bass. You thought it was increasing bass because of this reason and that reason, but that's not really what it's doing. So I'm buying, like, for example, this is just one example. I'm buying a bunch of inexpensive Tube Screamer pedals. And then I'm going to explain, I'm going to break the circuit down in very easy to understand terms. Yeah. You know? And then I'm going to say, okay, so here's some basic mods, you know, and I am going to say, okay, if you change this part of the schematic, then it's going to do this. But so I'm going to explain it that way. And then I'm going to say, and here's, you know, 4 or 5 different modifications you can do to the Tube Screamer circuit that are super easy and don't require a whole lot of effort other than maybe swapping some parts around. Okay, because, I mean, And as a kind of side note, I say it that way because, like, for example, you could take a tube screamer and turn it into an OCD because you have two op amps there and you just have to do a bunch of off-board wiring, and before you know it, half of it's, you know, point-to-point wired, right? But that's right. That's possible, but that's way above what a lot of people are going to do if they're modifying a pedal. Like, at that point, you might as well just build the pedal. You know what I mean? So So that's why I say I'm going to have a couple, you know, easy to do mods that apply across all these different pedals that are, like, based on the Tube Screamer.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So
okay, I got you. I was about to ask that. So this is going to work for any TS-based.
Right. So I'm explaining, like, here's the schematic. Now, you know, on R1 on the TS9 is not going to be R1 on the Joyo Vintage Overdrive, you know?
Right.
It's just, like, the numbers are different, but the schematic, the roadmap is the same. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, so with that said, so I got...
That Joyo's a real high-quality piece, right?
Yes, actually, I'm up one and down one. Because I bought two of them. I bought a Ultimate Overdrive, which is an OCD clone.
Mm-hmm.
And then I bought the Vintage Overdrive, which is a Tube Screamer clone.
Right.
The Ultimate Overdrive worked out of the box. The Ultimate Overdrive did work out of the box. The Vintage Overdrive did not. So, and I kind of expected, I mean, like, they're inexpensive pedals. I figured there's probably not a whole lot of, I mean, I'm just guessing at that price, there's probably not a whole lot of QA going on. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I'm like, all right, well, I mean, like, it can't be that hard. I'm gonna pull this thing apart. I'm sure it's probably just like they stuck a diode in backwards or a wire came out or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, no. No, that wasn't it at all. Uh-uh. No.
Tell me more, Brian. I really don't know what was wrong with it.
With multi-layered circuit boards, what you have is you'll have signal paths, okay? So the signals are going places. And then you'll have sometimes a ground plane. This is like in the middle of the circuit board, okay? So this is...
Like you're making a sandwich.
Like you're making a sandwich. Like this is a Whopper for our American audience. Like you got a couple hamburgers and bread and then hamburgers and bread and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's like, this is layers in between, not on the top, not on the bottom, in between where you can't get to them.
Right.
There could be a ground plane or a ground and power plane both. Or, I mean, you can, depending on how much money you want to spend on circuit boards, you can have a bunch of different layers in there. Well, it just so happened in this one, I think it was the power layer, there was something wrong with the actual circuit board itself. So the entire chip was getting 9 volts. There was no ground anywhere.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because normally it's halved, right?
Well, parts of it are going to be... So you have... With a 9-volt DC pedal, like that's just running off a battery, you're going to have a couple different reference points. You're going to have ground, you're going to have 9 volts, and you're going to have a half reference, right? And then, so from that half reference, you can bias an op amp. You can... run different portions of that circuit to it in order to make it work right. I know that seems very vague, but without, like, showing you a schematic, I can't explain it over a microphone.
Okay.
So there was no ground. It was just 9 volts everywhere. Everywhere.
Oh.
Everywhere. And after pulling everything apart, I'm like, holy crap. Yeah, this circuit board's bad. This should have been tested up front. Like, that's the first thing you do. When you get a circuit board, is you test the points to make sure that, like, you didn't... Because that happens when you get printed circuit boards. Sometimes when they're making them, there'll be one out of, you know, a couple hundred that has something wrong with it. So you got to test for that. You know what I mean?
Well, you'd think at the bare minimum you'd plug the pedal in at the end when you were done.
Well,
make sure it all works.
At the bare minimum, there should be a test of some sort like that, yeah. You would think...
I would think. I'm also, like, sitting here scratching my head. I'm like, they spent the time to do a multi-layered board on a Tube Screamer clone?
Well, you got to think. If you're making thousands and thousands and thousands of these, it's not that much more to have a multi-layered board.
Yeah, but why?
Because...
Is what I'm wondering.
Because it's an easy way to get to ground and power.
Okay. Okay.
You know, it just allows the traces to not. I mean, you can get less. It all depends on how you lay it out. So you can get less interference. You can get less noise. You don't have to worry about traces crossing or going by things that they shouldn't go by near as much.
Okay.
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 You can just control things better. So, you know, and from a layout perspective, I mean, it takes you, you know, like 20 minutes longer to do it that way. So it's not that big a deal from the design perspective.
But there's a, okay, I was just curious because I was like, that seems like a waste of time, but it's not.
No,
okay.
Not really. No. No, it's probably actually easier because now you're not having to juggle like power and ground and everything all on the same side.
Okay, I gotcha.
So, anyways. So, yeah, that was pretty frustrating. So now I can't. So now I have to buy another one because I can't use this one now that I've tore it all apart.
And the board's bad. So,
right,
great.
Right. So, yeah, it was a little frustrating. And big shout outs to the eBayer who sold it to me. Appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Was it a store or was it some dude?
I think it was a store.
Oh.
It was supposed to be new.
Well. I was going to say, if it's a store and they didn't check it out of the box, like, I get that, I guess. But, like, I was like, if that's just some dude, then he's a jerk. Like, I could see a store just pulling the box off the shelf, like, and sending it on its way.
It happens. Like, no. I mean, yeah, DOA pedals do happen, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And usually, like, when it's something like that, it's usually it got juggled around a bunch and, you know, a wire is... You know, a solder joint had cracked or something like that. That doesn't happen that much, but it does happen, especially if you ever worked with the post office. In my town.
Oh boy.
There's times where you know, a box that's the size of a basketball or a football.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they like to you know, creatively throw those boxes in the bin that they go.
Or like FedEx, wonderful FedEx. One time, I had a guitar being shipped to me actually, and I knew that it was a guitar, so it's not something you want left out in the rain. And what does it do around here? It rains, right?
Yeah.
So I have a covered back porch. So in the instructions, I say, "Hey FedEx, if no one's home, could you please leave this on the back porch?"
Right.
And they're like, "Okay, no problem." And I check my tracking, and keep in mind, it's supposed to rain today. That day. This was a year ago.
Right.
I check my tracking, and it says, yep, dropped off on front porch. So I drive home really quickly, and yes, lo and behold, there's the guitar just sitting there, ready to be swiped by a thief, ready to be rained upon, ready for destruction. Fortunately, that didn't happen, but I was pretty... That's why I got a P.O. box, so it'd always be inside.
Yes, that's a good idea. Very good idea. Mm-hmm. And you know, not all drivers are that way. I mean, my UPS guy is super cool. He knows that I work in, like, the barn across the road. So mm-hmm. he'll, like, knock on the door and be like, hey, man, got some packages for you. You know, rather than just like, oh, no one's home.
Right. Nobody's here. They must not want these.
Right.
Better send them back.
Right, because I get a lot of signature confirmation stuff. You know, if you're buying amps and stuff, no one's like, oh, I'm sure to be fine. Sure to be fine with no signature.
It'll be okay.
So, yeah, so I get...
Oh, before I forget, I want to take one quick step back. Just as a public service announcement to everyone. We were talking about DOA pedals, right?
Yes.
Just something I seen happen recently. And that I've made the mistake of doing before, is thinking, man, this pedal's busted. Make sure that when you are deciding whether or not the pedal is broken, that you have the input and output plugged in, because some pedals will not turn on. The light won't come on if you don't have the input jack plugged in.
Correct.
Just a public service announcement.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Some.
Yep.
Not all, but some. So don't think that the pedal's necessarily broken if the light don't come on if you don't have the input plugged in.
Right.
Just a PSA.
Right. And to really clarify, in case you don't know, when we say DOA, we're not talking like DOD pedals. We're talking about dead on arrival.
Oh, yeah. I should have said that.
Yes, it's not a pedal company. Those DOAs are terrible pedals. Yeah, yes, that's not what we're talking about.
No. So anyway, sorry to, but I wanted to make that note before we got off subject again.
No, perfect. Well, that's all I got for this week. You want to wrap it up?
Oh, we could put a bow on it.
Put a bow on
it. Let's do it.
Give it a big hug and kiss. Send it on its way.
Bye-bye. see you, episode number 100, whatever.
Okay, so give me your final thoughts. Final thoughts with Blake. We need music here. Final thoughts with Blake.
Oh. I want to give a big shout-out. This has nothing to do with anything we talked about. I want to give a big shout-out to Dr. Scientist. Pedals. You know Dr. Scientist?
I do.
At all?
Yes.
Yeah. I just must say the reverb has the most gorgeous plate mode in it ever. I'm in love with that
Very
thing
cool.
right now.
I'll have to check one of those out.
Yeah. The P2 mode is just a simple but beautiful sounding plate reverb. There you go.
Very cool. I'll have to check that out.
That's all I have.
Okay, and I'd like to give a big shout out to Joyo. keep making great stuff, man. I've got nothing better to do than try to fix it. I'm teasing. I'm sure most of their stuff isn't like that. I'm just giving you a hard time. Because people this do it to episode. Me on the internet, that means I'm allowed to do it to others, right? Right.
It's true. This episode is sponsored by Joyo.
And Sinusoid Cables.
And Sinusoid Cables, of course. Every day.
Every day. All right, man. Thanks for coming.
All right, later.
See you.
Bye.
So thanks again for listening to the Chasing Tone podcast. I really appreciate it. If you'd like to email me, you can email podcast@wamplerpedals.com. You can email Blake at info@tonemob.com. I should also say, if you're a fan of podcasts, make sure you check out his podcast, which is called The Tone Mob, where he interviews a ton of people in the pedal and amp and guitar industry. And it's a great podcast. So make sure you check that out. And also, if you happen to be on Facebook, make sure you check out our Facebook groups where we talk about gear. And if you have any comments or questions, make sure you email us, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening.